Alors, réflexion, je dois couper court à cette réflexion des plus intéressantes et des plus pertinentes pour passer à une autre réflexion que je suis certain sera fascinante et pertinente. I was walking on the main street of my neighborhood in Montreal the other day, and there was a camera, people sort of busy around a person. I realized Sugar Sammy was walking down the street. I was with my 9-year-old daughter. She asked me who he was, and I said, "That's Sugar Sammy. He's a very famous comic." And she looked at him, and after a few seconds of reflection, she said, "He has nice hair," which was her reflections on Sugar Sammy. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about Sugar Sammy than just about his hair from Sunita Nigam, who is a doctoral candidate at McGill in the Department of
English.
And her paper is entitled Performing Montreal, Sugar Sammy, Celebrity, and Branding.
It's actually now called...
It is no longer that title. It has nothing to do with Sugar Sammy.
I'm still talking about this guy, yeah. It's now called Performing Montreal, Sugar Sammy, Celebrity, and Urban Desire. So I've dropped to the branding part for this presentation today. And I thought you were going to say your daughter said he's really tall, because that's what my grandmother said when she first met him. He is really tall. He's like 6'4" or something. I'd like to begin by thanking Annick and Shauna for two really evocative, excellent presentations this morning. And I'll thank you also very much to the organizers of the conference for putting together such an exciting weekend. So my paper today, which I've titled Performing Montreal, Sugar Sammy, Celebrity, and Urban Desire, comes at the end of a research project I've written on the cultural work of the performances of Montreal stand-up comedian Sugar Sammy. As many of you will know, Sugar Sammy is the stage name of Samir Kular, a Montrealer of Punjabi background from Côte des Neiges, and Kular speaks and performs in English, French, Hindi, and Punjabi. Since 2008, Kular has enjoyed feverish success in Montreal, in part for his engagement with hot-button issues such as racism and nationalism in Quebec, as well as for his unique perspective as a brown, multilingual Montrealer who grew up in a post-Bill 101 Quebec. In May of 2013, Kular won two of the most prized awards at Quebec's annual comedy awards show, Le Gala Les Oliviers, namely the best show of the year for his 100% French show, En Français S'il Vous Plaît, selected by the Association des Professionnels de l'Industrie de l'Humour, and the Humorist of the Year, chosen by the public. In my previous work, I sought to discover Sugar Sammy's relationship to Quebec's long comedic tradition, to gender, and finally to dominant and non-dominant views about national belonging in Quebec. Today's paper marks a turn towards the relationship of Kular and his work to the city of Montreal more specifically. While Sugar Sammy is a case study for my queries, my hope is that the paper might help to open a conversation about the relationship between performance and the urban space more generally. Indeed, while I come from a literature and performance background, I hope this conversation might develop into a sort of collaborative thought experiment, which in fact I think Shauna has begun for us very evocatively with the figure of dance, about thinking about how performance and Montreal's various spaces and interfaces in tandem might enrich this weekend's reflection on Montreal, the creative city. And I'm sure that your comments and questions will be invaluable for me as I continue to conceptualize how the city is imagined, performed, and conjured in the theater, as well as how the city itself functions as a stage for our various urban performances and interactions. My paper is divided into three parts. Section 1 is titled Urban Desire or the City as Actor. Section 2 is called Celebrity, Election, and Representation. And finally, I've named Section 3 Building the City in the Theater. Section 1, Urban Desire or the City as Actor. I'd like to begin with a quotation from urban planner Kevin Lynch's 1960 book, The Image of the City, in which Lynch writes, quote, "Looking at cities can give a special pleasure, however commonplace the site may be. Like a piece of architecture, the city is a construction in space, but one of vast scale, a thing perceived only in the course of long spans of time." A little further on, Lynch continues, "Every city has had long associations with some part of his city, and his image is soaked in memories and meanings." Lynch's focus on the city as an imagistic space brings me to Sugar Sammy's visual presence in Montreal. As many of you may have noticed, this past year, Montreal's metro system was plastered with the face of Sugar Sammy. In fact, since 2012, whether you found yourself billboard gazing from a car, walking through the streets, or opening a newspaper, there is a good chance that Sugar Sammy is making a face at you from somewhere. Most recently, you might have seen his image beside that of humorous Dominique Michel in the Emma Québec blood drive campaign, or as part of the media buzz about the new TV show he's developing with fellow Quebec comedian Simon-Olivier Fecteau and Quebec novelist India Desjardins. The popular and critical craze surrounding Couillard's recent shows in Quebec, especially En Français s'il vous plaît and You're Gonna Rire, has been so remarkable that a recent issue of Reader's Digest Canada referred to it as sugar mania. Already in 2012, though, the journalist Marc Cassivi was referring to Couillard as an Yvon Deschamps Indien. I would like to submit that the ubiquity of Sugar Sammy's face in Montreal begs a question about a different sort of face, the face of the city. A city has many faces, from its buildings, streets, landscapes, and brandscapes, to its politicians, local artists, and celebrities, and finally to the city dwellers themselves. We should think of these faces as interfaces, that is, faces with which we are in constant interaction and which give us a sense of place. These faces tell us things, even give us things, but also want things. They want and invite a certain type of interaction. It's as if Mount Royal silently said, "Climb me," to the thousands of people that walk, run, or ski it each year, or the city's skyline as you enter Montreal from the Champlain Bridge at night whispered, "Admire me," or indeed, "Light me up with fireworks," as happens every summer. Or on the other hand, it's as though the newly gentrifying neighborhoods of Villeray and Mile X say, "Come," to some wealthier urbanites looking for a deal, and "Go," to many of the residents who will no longer be able to afford the rent as the cost of housing goes up. The urban desire represented in my title then refers to two distinct desires. The first desire is the desire of city dwellers and decision makers themselves, specifically as these desires come to manifest themselves in the physical city by way of things like architecture, design, and official and vernacular spatial practices. Here, desire moves from people to the city. The second desire moves in the opposite direction, from the city to the people. This is to say that the physical, perceivable city is always more than just the condensation of social desires in space. The city also pushes back against these desires. In other words, the city is more than just a passive stage on which urban interactions take place. The city is also an agent, indeed an actor, in the urban experience. At the risk of sounding slightly naive or indeed animistic, I want to take seriously the question of what the city as a perceived entity wants. I mean by this, what sorts of interactions, uses, and feelings does the city seem to invite or bar from its various inhabitants and users? I'm inspired here by psychologist and scholar of visual perception James Gibson's theory of affordances. Gibson developed the concept of affordances in 1970 to mean the ways in which environments communicate their uses to us. An affordance is not entirely in the user, nor entirely in the environment, but rather in the user's very interactions with the environment. I'm also thinking of art historian W.J.T. Mitchell's evocative book, What Do Pictures Want? The Lives and Loves of Images, in which Mitchell proposes that we reckon with images as beings with desires and demands of their own. If Mitchell wants us to hold our suspension of disbelief long enough to consider that images have an uncanny way of working on us, of seeming alive, I suggest we do the same for cities, which also have their mystical and sometimes frightening ways of seeming alive. I want to then proceed, as Mitchell does, with images, as if the question, what do cities want, were worth asking, and then to ask, how does our city come to reflect, refuse, or reconfigure what its heterogeneous citizens want? And finally, what does Sugar Sammy's young, brown, male, multilingual face, as one of the city's public images, tell us about what Montreal wants? These are big questions with many answers, and they bring me to section 2 of my paper, Celebrity, Election, and Representation. As Montreal is about to elect its new mayor after a dispiriting bout of mayoral corruption, I would like to ask what would happen if we understood fandom as an unofficial type of election, one which might even betray a certain cynicism about political representation. Urban images, popular culture, and local celebrity are all important sites of struggle over popular memory and urban identities. Montreal's special history with the performing arts, and comedians in particular, in which performance has served as a matrix for national and urban fantasy, informs an understanding of Sugar Sammy's emergence as a celebrity comedian. Indeed, the Quebecois performing arts have, especially since the Quiet Revolution and the inauguration of Le Nouveau Théâtre Québécois with Tremblay's Les Belles Sœurs in 1968, have served as a mirror and guarantee of national and urban identity for its audiences. A similar investment in popular reflection is found in the comic tradition. Robert Aird's Histoire politique du comique au Québec is a history of the various ways comedy as a particularly urban form has served to lend fortitude to both the Quebec nation and the character of Montreal. To cite only the most famous example, Yvon Deschamps is remembered for making Saint-Henri vivid on Quebec stages, lending a cultural idiom to the neighborhood itself. But if the comedic tradition in Quebec, like other legitimated Quebecois performing arts, has historically served to mirror a national or urban character back to the public, as Aaron Hurley argues, this task of mirroring has left, quote, little room for a national self that is not already culturally dominant, thereby shunting to the nation or city sidelines women and marginalized others. And indeed, with a few important exceptions, the Montreal stand-up scene, since its development in the early 1970s, has largely been dominated by white, francophone, heterosexual, and decidedly nationalist men. And I would like to note a few of these important exceptions, which include the women humorists such as Rosalma Ouellette or Lapoune, Clémence Desrochers, Dominique Michel, Denise Filiatro, Lise Dion, and comedians of color including Anthony Kavanagh, Boucard Diouf, Rachid Badouri, and Normand Brathwaite. Comedy continues to be an important engine of the urban imagination in Montreal. And indeed, in a moment of general decline for theater and performance going in the city, comedy shows, along with circuses, continue to draw the biggest crowds. Within this context, what to make of Sugar Sammy's intense popularity and of its manifestation by way of his extreme visibility in the city and media? Might the current visual presence of Sugar Sammy in Montreal be understood as the result of his fans' election of a local celebrity performer to represent their city to them? Is not Sugar Sammy also running for election, an election for urban representation? On top of standing out as somewhat of an oddity within Quebec's stand-up scene, Poulard's popular election seems to actively counter recent official political discourses about language, race, religion, and gender in Quebec, which has largely been punitive toward the usage of languages other than French and forms of dress deemed religious. Poulard is notorious for switching between languages in his performances, and is one of the first comedians of color, and the only openly and proudly Federalist one, to achieve such a degree of fame in Quebec. I would like to argue that Poulard is an example of the capacity of celebrity to alter the physical landscape of Montreal, not only because of his visual presence in the city, but also because his work introduces forms of language, behavior, and knowledge which challenge what counts as legitimate public appearance and expression. Let me be clear here. I don't want to overly or naively celebratory of Poulard's work. As much as I think the sugar mania phenomenon is worthy of reflection, there are also several problems with it. The potential progressiveness of Poulard's comedy is, for example, limited by its virility and ultimately heteronormativity, which is quite common for the stand-up scene in Quebec and around and abroad. Marc Cassivy has noted in a review of En Français, s'il vous plaît, that the most boring, not to mention most offensive moments of Poulard's show is when he falls into tired performances of machismo. If Poulard's ethnic, linguistic, and political positions render him a potentially new face for Montreal, the fact that he is a man does not. And here I'm sort of wondering whether the current mayoral candidate, Mélanie Joly, and her impressive visual presence in the city with the modern design of her campaign posters might serve as an important intertext or indeed interface for Sugar Sammy. If Montreal has never had a mayor of color, it has also never had a woman for mayor. And of course, it doesn't follow that being a person of color or a woman means that you necessarily legitimate or defend the interests of these groups. But my main point is that Coulard's work encourages us to ask whose bodies and whose urban experiences are generally validated on stage and in the city itself. This leads me into the third and final section of the paper, Building the City in the Theater. In Sugar Sammy's many interviews and comedy shows, his identification with Montreal is explicit, and the city of Montreal comes alive in his work. If Yvan Deschamps is remembered for bringing Saint-Henri onto Quebec stages, Coulard has brought the ethnically and linguistically diverse neighborhoods of Côte des Neiges and Park Extension onto the stage and into the media. In Your Gonna Rire, Coulard opens by describing a uniquely Montreal experience of multilingualism in the neighborhood of Park Extension. He says, "Tout le monde me demande, everybody's like, pourquoi un show bilingue? Why a bilingual show? Because this is Montreal, baby. Yes, yes, it's the only city in the world where you can run into a Greek guy in Park X and he'll talk to you in three different languages in the same fucking sentence." By enacting his familiarity with Montreal, Coulard grounds himself in intimate geographies. Sherry Simon has argued in her excellent book, Translating Montreal, Episodes in the Life of a Divided City, that it is in these kinds of communities where multilingualism, mixed languages, and code switching are preferred modes of communication that new kinds of citizenship are being developed. Coulard's performances are also episodes in the life of the city, but ones in which the theme often seems more multiplied in the diverse languages and ethnic backgrounds represented in his material and audiences than it does divided. Coulard's intimacy with the city as a place in which differences can come together in dynamic, funny ways extends to his relationship with Montreal audiences. For instance, at the first performance of Your Gonna Rire I attended, a young man arrived a half hour late. Coulard called him out on his lateness with his usual smile. "Really? Come on, man. Where were you?" "Je travaillais," the man responded. Coulard switched to French and asked him when he finished work and where he was coming from. When the man replied, "Namur," a relatively far metro stop from the Olympia Theater, Coulard needled him to the delight of the audience for thinking he could finish work at 8 p.m. at Namur and arrive at a show at 8 p.m. downtown. This exchange is one of several examples in which Coulard invites his audience to engage in the mental map-making of Montreal. Coulard's surprised reaction, "Namur," to the man's answer has his audience members trying to imaginatively navigate the distance and route between Namur and the theater. As the audience in all its linguistic and ethnical diversity is plunged into imagining the city together, the city is disclosed as both a physical landscape and an imagined narrative that they share, one that exceeds their collective presence in the theater as an ephemeral audience. A possibility of intimacy is opened up here. Coulard's performances of Montreal reveal the shared difficulty of disentangling cultural belonging from the textures of being in one's everyday life. Indeed, one thing that does escape Benedict Anderson's famous theory of the imagined community is the co-creative relationship the imagined nation exists in with the material landscape. In being grounded in the cityscape, Coulard's work spatializes the imagined community, revealing the city itself to be an actor in a form of communal belonging. Appropriately, the background for Your Gonna Rire was a colossal image of Montreal lit up at night. So, when Sugar Sammy makes a face at you from a billboard or a bus, when his face is plastered all over town and seems to even stand in for the town, what does it want? What does it give you, and what does it make you want? The young comedian's cultural and linguistic identities might make his representation of Montreal desirable for certain citizens who find themselves underrepresented in Montreal's political, cultural, and civic life. The fact that he is a man who also uses machismo in his comedy makes his representation of the city problematic. Sugar Sammy's popular election indicates that Montreal may represent itself in a more diverse, complex manner through stand-up performance and celebrity than it does through its politics. Are we willing to understand Couillard's urban election via fandom as a form of what Karen Frank and Quentin Stevens would call a loosening of the city space, by which they mean the many ways that urban residents creatively appropriate public space to meet their own needs and desires? In the midst of divergent political and economic claims on the city of Montreal, let's remember that cultural forms, too, make the city resonate for its inhabitants. And the question that I would like to leave us with is this. If the city can be said to want to tell and to invite, to which needs, desires, and creative impulses of which citizens does the city seem most frequently to yield?
Thank you very much. Your paper gave rise in my mind to the very sort of salutary image of our mayoralty debates being augmented by the presence of Sugar Sammy. Just wondering how a dialogue à cinq rather than à quatre would certainly be funnier. So we have, thank you very much also for being as succinct as you were. We have a lot of time for questions and...
Hi, I'm Claudine Gilina-Fauché. Thank you for a great presentation. I was wondering if I could ask you about Sugar Sammy's. I think he's an interesting case because many Quebecois humorists, I'm thinking of Antoine Cavanaugh, for example, or many others, start in Montreal and then make it big and move out. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like Sugar Sammy has done the opposite, where he has made it big in the States, and even there was a time before we knew Sugar Sammy where the Americans knew him more. Mm-hmm. And he has come back to Montreal and is very much steeped in a sense of place, and you're saying that he's inviting us to map out Montreal. So I was wondering if you could speak to this kind of counterintuitive movement.
Yeah. It is very interesting. You're absolutely right that he sort of became well known in the United States first. He was named one of the top 10 rising comedians by the LA something, some LA sort of publication. Pardon?
Hollywood Reporter.
It was a Hollywood Reporter. Thank you. Several years ago, and then he came back to Montreal and sort of tried to make it big as a comedian here. I think he was encouraged a lot by, he speaks about having been encouraged by his friend and fellow comedian François Morancy to come back and perform in French, and he was convinced that it wouldn't work, that his style of humor and the sorts of things he would want to talk about would be too offensive to a lot of the public in Quebec, but François Morancy really sort of pushed him to try, and then tried it as part of sort of... It was actually the show Raisonnable in 2008 that I think was hosted by Rachid Badouri. It was his first performance in Quebec in French. And audiences loved him from the beginning here. And then why did he decide to sort of stay and try and make it big here? I'm not really sure, but it seems to me that he sort of has made a concerted effort to try and claim Montreal, to claim a public in Montreal. It seems to him, in all of his interviews, he talks about being a Montrealer, and being a Montrealer is sort of this important thing in both his work and his public persona. But yeah, I can't say much more than that.
maybe I can speak.
Yeah.
I'm his editor.
Oh, okay. Oh.
This is like the Woody Allen movie.
Wonderful.
Mettons de 2007 à 2011, on a voyagé pendant 10 mois à faire, par année à faire le tour du monde et Sam avait le goût de voir ses parents. C'est quelqu'un qui est très très proche de sa famille puis ses parents sont très importants pour lui. Ses parents vieillissent c'est sous, aussi, alors il avait le goût d'être ici, de moins voyager, mais on n'avait aucune idée que ça allait marcher aussi fort, que ce soit... le show bilingue à Montréal, qui était vraiment une surprise totale. Puis ensuite, on arrive de faire des shows à Sept-Îles, puis la folie est rendue jusqu'à Sept-Îles. C'est vraiment... Et il y a un aspect qui est vraiment particulier dans l'humour de Sam, parce que je pense que, oui, il y a une question d'identité, comment les gens sont appropriés Sam, puis comment ils se sont, appropriés cet artiste-là, surtout les communautés ethniques. Mais je vous dirais que c'est beaucoup à la base, il est juste drôle. Tout simplement, il déclenche des rires d'une efficacité qui est, je vous dirais, il y a une classe à part, pas juste au Québec, mais à travers le monde. Alors, c'est ce qui fait que les gens se sont... Quand le bouche-à-oreille se fait, les gens vont voir le show puis disent « Wow, j'ai jamais ri comme ça de ma vie », ben ça fait que c'est ce qui fait que ça crée un engouement. Puis à la base, il est juste comique. Si il disait les mêmes contenus, mais il était pas drôle, je vous dirais, ça, on aurait fait 3 shows à Montréal, ça aurait été mort là, t'sais. L'autre aspect qui est important, moi, que j'ai hâte d'avoir une bonne conversation avec toi, parce que c'est trippant d'avoir quelqu'un qui a fait une observation en profondeur, c'est que comment il se positionne, lui, il réussit à vendre des billets puis de faire une folie à Sept-Îles, puis il blaste les Québécois de souche. Il rentre dedans sur leur travers et, comme on dit au poker, il va all-in, tu sais. Alors, il a vraiment pas froid aux yeux par rapport à ça. Le numéro qu'il a fait en 2009 au gala Juste pour rire, où ce qu'il dit, bon, son fameux gag, là, qu'il y a 2 sortes de Québécois, éduqués, cultivés, bien élevés, et ceux qui ont voté oui. Tu sais, ça vraiment, my God, sur le coup, on se demandait, ça va-tu passer? Et finalement, il y a eu comme une vague dans la salle, puis là, les gens comme... On m'a dit « catcher le personnage ». Il y a ça aussi, il y a Samir Couleur, le gars de Côte-des-Neiges, mais il y a Sugar Sammy, le gars de scène, que lui, il est là pour provoquer, pour faire générer des réactions. Mais ça, c'est cet aspect-là de comment réussir à conquérir un territoire en se les mettant à dos, en faisant des blagues sur eux, puis il y a des réactions des soirs là, que... On sent qu'il y a des gags qui sont durs à rentrer, mais en tout cas, bref, ça, j'ai vraiment hâte d'avoir un échange chez vous. Peut-être vous avez une... Je sais pas si ça fait partie de vos réflexions, mais en tout cas,
non,
ça serait une de mes questions.
J'aimerais ça parler avec vous aussi.
Qu'est-ce qui fait que les gens ont envie, vont là, puis c'était d'ailleurs une des réflexions de la journaliste Nathalie Petrovski, qui dit, elle se sentait mal, elle dit, je vais croire que des Québécois de souche rient sur ce gag-là dans la salle, là, tu sais, c'est déconcertant, mais... Il a gagné les gens qui sont chers. Bref, pour moi, c'est encore un mystère.
Merci.
J'aurais envie de rebondir sur... en fait, de rebondir entre ce que vous venez de dire. Merci beaucoup pour cette intervention, donc, d'insider, comme on dit. Et la notion d'élection. Moi, il y a quelque chose que pendant votre communication que je ne pouvais pas m'empêcher de penser, c'est que Montréal, malgré le fait que nous avons élu en un sens un comédien de couleur d'une minorité visible, il y a un autre sens dans lequel nous n'élirons pas. Nous avons 4 candidats. La diversité de nos candidats, c'est que nous avons pour une femme qui est un peu moins âgée que la moyenne des candidats qui se présentent, mais qui est bien blanche, qui s'appelle Jolie, qui va se présenter contre un Coderre, un Bergeron et Côté. Donc, on s'entend que Côté diversité, c'est coussi coussa. Alors que dans une ville que nous avons tendance, en tant que Montréalais, très fiers de notre super diversité, une ville beaucoup moins diverse comme Calgary, a élu un homme de couleur, de la même couleur de peau, grosso modo, que Sugar Sammy, un musulman en plus. Et alors, j'aurais envie tout simplement de... C'est pas tellement une question qu'une réflexion, mais peut-être également un challenge à votre notion d'élection. Oui, nous l'avons élu en un sens, mais dans un sens, on ne l'élit pas pantoute. Et Calgary, par contre, eux, malgré leur self-image as a perhaps less sort of hip and trendy city, have unproblematically, and he's wildly popular, right?
I know, he's so cool. Yeah, no, I think...
Sans commentaire.
Yeah, so I just like to, just short, very short response to that. I think yeah, we need to keep in mind the differences between official election and official politics. And we still need to continue to focus on these areas and to try and do work in terms of promoting a sort of more equal reflection of society in civic politics. But I'm also interested to look at, I don't want official politics to be the end game. Like, I want to also think about the various ways that sort of vernacular forms of representation can also function in ways that are not sort of determined by official politics. So this is sort of part of my exploration in that.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Francis Gosselin. Je suis un doctorat que j'ai déposé en décembre dernier sur la bureaucratie créative. Et j'aime bien explorer les oppositions. Et j'écoutais en fait les trois conférences. Je me suis fait des petites notes qui commençaient en fait un peu sur la remarque que vous avez faite, Madame Germain, ce matin, que par rapport à Richard Florida, qui est tantôt décrié par les universitaires, mais beaucoup aimé par le public et notamment les décideurs. Et finalement, cette idée que il y a comme une capacité dans Florida à vendre l'idée, à mettre en scène l'idée. Puis je trouve qu'à travers le panel qu'on a eu ce matin, on retrouve cette idée de la mise en scène finalement et un peu de la. Je voudrais pas dire que Sugar Sammy est insubstantiel, mais en fait ça reste de l'humour et donc c'est du tac au tac, c'est léger forcément. Donc et il y a comme dans le fond une évacuation de la substance en fait et en fait, quand on a eu tout ce débat sur la charte au fil du panel aujourd'hui, c'est qu'au final, je veux dire, on évacue la substance pour se réfugier dans l'affect, en fait, dans l'émotion, dans ce qui fait réagir. Et dans le fond, est-ce que le succès de cette créativité urbaine, elle n'est pas justement dans cet affect, dans cette... et donc insubstantiel, et donc un peu anti-intellectuel, et en fait, que faisons-nous ici, en fait? Est-ce qu'il y a une place encore pour l'académique, pour l'universitaire, pour l'intellectuel à explorer cette créativité, si forcément, la seule créativité qui a du succès, c'est celle qui nous évacue du discours, en fait?
Donc, alors, je comprends que la question est adressée, en fait, aux trois conférencières, donc je vous inviterai toutes les trois à réagir si vous avez quelque chose à dire. Shana, de toute évidence, a quelque chose à dire.
Oui. Oui. Parce qu'en effet, ça c'est, moi je dirais, leçon de pluralisme juridique en droit. C'est tout à fait sérieux, c'est académique, c'est intellectuel, mais en même temps, c'est un défi à l'État, maybe to the particular look of those whom we think should be in positions of governance and authority, the forms that we think law should take and the ways in which we should be serious. When we think about law, we have to kind of sit up and think about drafting charters and constitutions and codes and rules rather than thinking about the ways in which and it's interesting, when you look at legal education, you look at the actual practices in law, you have to be much more creative all the time. It really is responding to interactions between people at the same time that it's paying attention to l'encadrement officiel. Ça, c'est important aussi. Ça, c'est très important d'avoir les constitutions, les chartes et tout ça qui donnent les encadrements, les lignes, si on veut. Mais ça, ce que les participants en droit font tout le temps, c'est colorier, si on veut, à l'intérieur des lignes. Mais en même temps, McDonald, il irait plus loin, il dirait qu'il y a des participants qui tracent des lignes aussi. C'est pas juste dans les mains des gouvernements, de ceux qui rédige les lois, les règles. Et ça, c'est très, en effet, c'est très académique. C'est important comme approche de recherche, mais en même temps, c'est basé sur les exemples un peu surprenants, des fois. But in fact, as you introduced your doctoral project, I was going to say that the C, I talked about alliteration a little bit, all these C's, collaboration, cooperation, creativity, construction. Interestingly, this legal pluralism approach also, there's a challenge here. It also perhaps leads to corruption. right? Because if you have creativity among those who are not in the official, right, kind of in official positions of power, it arguably gives you fertile ground for corruption. I think what McDonald would say in response, and those who study legal pluralism, would be to say, yes, sure it does. And if you want to fight corruption, you better understand the ways in which law is created in a whole lot of places that are not just official sites. And you better understand this as conflicts of law, not law and those who are acting kind of hiding from the law or breaking the law, but those who are creating law in a very strong sense in other places. And that understanding will actually be crucial to fighting corruption. And the classic example for legal pluralists is looking at the mafia in different contexts and looking at the strength of law creation or norm creation that can happen.
So either one of you want to pick up on that theme?
Moi, j'étais juste curieuse pour vous. Penser ou faire de la recherche ou penser à l'émotion ou l'affect, ça ne peut pas être un... Ça ne peut pas faire partie d'un discours académique ou... Je pense que je comprenais mal la distinction que vous faites entre...
Je n'essaie pas du tout de remettre en cause l'étude de l'affect comme oui. Science, mais simplement que les discours publics qu'on a, la charte oui. N'est pas une charte, c'est pas un texte de loi, je veux dire, c'est de la foutaise. Weber et n'importe qui va vous dire qu'il y a laïcité, je veux dire, la Commission des droits de la personne l'a dit, je veux dire, légalement, il n'y a pas de charte. Il n'y a charte que dans le discours pour nous faire réagir, comme il n'y a, Sugar Sammy, qu'une forme de provocation, mais encore une fois, insubstantielle, ce qui veut pas dire qui dit que des conneries, j'aime okay. beaucoup Sugar Sammy, mais ce n'est pas un discours intellectuel. Et donc, quelle place reste-t-il pour l'intellect sur la place publique, en fait, dans ces enjeux de créativité? Est-ce qu'on doit l'évacuer pour laisser toute la place à l'affect, à l'humour, au débat vide, etc.? Ou comment est-ce qu'on réintroduit, en fait, là, dans le discours légitime, en dehors de salles closes et entre nous, là, comme je suis très content d'être ici, mais je veux dire, c'est juste qu'on est quand même tous des intellectuels qui réfléchissons, et donc comment est-ce qu'on réintroduit ce discours-là substantiel dans l'espace public autour de la créativité, en fait, mm-hmm. C'est d'une autre manière un peu ma question.
Okay. Est-ce qu'il y a une autre question? Alors, on peut-être qu'on peut prendre ça comme une question à laquelle on réfléchira longtemps. Je pense que vous avez soulevé des enjeux fondamentaux. Donc, une dernière question avant de clore la séance.
Bonjour, Yves Bourguignon. À la fin de cet avant-midi, il y a une chose qui me surprend un peu, c'est combien on s'attache à tout ce qui est officiel, à tout ce qui est gouvernemental, à tout ce qui est décidé par ailleurs. J'avais beaucoup de regrets d'entendre Mme Chambers dire « Montréal n'a pas de pouvoir ». Et quelqu'un répondait « si nos citoyens pouvaient s'entendre ensemble ». C'est déjà ça qui se passe tous les jours. Là. On disait « le pouvoir provincial étouffe le pouvoir municipal, Montréal est détesté en dehors de Montréal ». C'est comme si tout était déterminé par l'extérieur, alors que si on regarde ce qui se passe dans la réalité, les gens qui sont ici font tous les jours des choses hyper intéressantes, et il se passe déjà des choses qui vont très loin en dehors de tout ce que les chartes pourraient essayer de chapeauter par le haut. On vient de dire « the official places of power ». Well, official places of power are on the streets, are by people that do things. Et donc, moi, je suis un petit peu surpris de voir, et je ne sais pas si l'orientation se contredira dans l'après-midi ou demain, mais je suis un petit peu surpris de voir l'importance qu'on accorde à tout ce qui est extérieur, chapeautant, régulateur, etc., alors que la vie de tous les jours, ben, la charte, elle n'existe pas beaucoup. La charte n'a pas empêché grand-chose dans les dernières semaines de continuer à se faire. Puis tout ce qui se fait sur le terrain, toutes les initiatives des gens qui fonctionnent, continuent à fonctionner. Et je pense que dans ce sens-là, le pouvoir de ce qui existe est beaucoup plus grand que le pouvoir de ce qui pourrait chapeauter ou orienter ou diriger ou limiter.
Je pense que dans un sens, je ne veux pas parler pour vous, dans un sens, c'était un peu le message qui sortait des trois communications, c'est-à-dire que nonobstant la réalité d'en haut, les négociations qui se font sur le trottoir, les négociations qui se font à la base... Donc, je pense qu'il y a une dialectique, mais les communications... Enfin, je devrais pas répondre.
Non, mais enfin, bon, je vais quand même je suis un peu triste que vous ayez compris ça, parce que c'était exactement l'opposé de ce que j'ai essayé de dire. Hein? Alors, peut-être que c'est les questions qu'on m'a posées qui m'ont fait dévier, bon, mais l'essentiel de mon propos, c'était quand même ça, c'est de dire que bon, la réalité des interactions quotidiennes, c'est ça qui fabrique notre monde d'abord. Donc, en fait, nous sommes d'accord.
Peut-être que c'est. On peut terminer sur cette note de consensus heureux. Alors, pour remercier une dernière fois nos trois conférencières. Alors, nous avons maintenant une heure pour le lunch. Je vous conseille de vous substanter parce que l'après-midi sera costaud. Nous avons donc à 1h une séance sur gouvernance, démocratie et citoyenneté montréalaise. Ensuite, à 3h30, 15h30, architecture, design et dynamique urbaine à Montréal. Et la journée sera chapeautée, terminée en beauté par une table ronde avec Saskia Sassen, Mark Kingwell de l'Université de Toronto et Simon Harel de l'Université de Montréal sur des nouvelles directions de recherche sur les villes. Alors, au plaisir de vous revoir dans 1 heure. Merci. Thank you, that was cool. Oui, oui, oui.